afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adusk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Thursday, July 13th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, we had pressure once again on gold and silver. Gold was down $1.60. In the New York spot price after market at $12.1940. Silver is down 18 cents today at $15.83. Platinum was down 12 bucks today at $9.08, with palladium down 8 at $860. So I'd have to assume the dollar is stronger, but not by much, up 0.05 at $95.80. Crude oil is inching up just little by little every day, up 0.57 at 46.06. And the paper markets today, the Dow was up 23 points, 21,555. The NASDAQ was up 13 at 62.75. And the S&P was up 4 at 24.47. The 10-year yield, 2.35%, up 0.02. And the euro was holding at 114, but it was still down 0.10. I predict, you predict, everybody predicts that we're just not that far away from a situation that is about to happen due to our financial system now. And there was an analyst on CNBC earlier, it was actually earlier this week, and he talks about how we're flowing toward the path similar to time prior to the Great Depression. Hmm. Now, if he just catches up on this, you know, of course, in the last couple months, and this is something that we do every day for how many years, for 20 plus years. He says that he believes that we're flowing toward the path of 1928 to 29 when Hoover was president. He says he points to the evidence of declining growth, as well as that fall is a weak time traditionally for the U.S. economy as people return from vacation. He thinks that the economy has been steady this year, but he still is warning that he's seeing this time that we're experiencing now as very much the same as the buildup prior to the Great Depression. He talks about Hoover. Now Trump is president. Both were presidents with no experience who come in with a Congress that is all Republican. Lots of big promises, lots of things that don't happen. And the fall is when people realize, wait, it hasn't played out the way they thought it would play out. He also sees the trends that are going to push interest rates down, making growth harder to find. And he looks at emerging markets as attractive. I wouldn't touch them, but he says bad demographics and too much debt here in the U.S., Europe, and Japan. And so another analyst who is, you know, definitely a pro paper pusher, thinks that this fall is going to be you know, an interesting time, that he points back to the Depression of 28 and 29, leading up to the big drop. So kind of interesting to see the comparison again. And certainly that something that we talk about every day.
Yep. Got an article from Gains, Pains, and Capital that runs on the same bent. Headline is Bubble Update. Stocks are now at 1999 bubble levels. And the point we're making here is that people who look at this are comparing the circumstances. Melody's, the author Melody was talking about, is comparing it to the Great Depression starting 1929, thereabouts. Here's some other people that are comparing what our where we are today relative to the Great Recession. And they're essentially saying we're at least as deep in doo-doo today as we were back in 2007. And there are other people that will go back to the tech bubble. All right, but the comparison is they are looking for a comparison for our current economic conditions as opposed to the conditions that just preceded the Great Depression, the tech bubble, the Great Recession, and that's the way they're trying to illustrate their point. They said, remember the 2007 bubble. Remember how everyone said it really wasn't that big of a bubble because stocks weren't as expensive as they'd been during the previous tech bubble? Remember how that turned out? The 2007 bubble about burst, leading to the greatest financial crisis in 80 years. Well, today's bubble is way bigger than that of 2007, and arguing that stocks are cheaper than they were during the tech bubble doesn't hold water anymore either. Based on the Standard & Poor's price-to-sales ratio, called the P/S ratio, P/S ratio, the 2007 bubble is a mere blip. We're now in territory not seen since the 1999-2000 tech bubble. Why does this matter? He says it's because earnings, cash flow, and book value are all financial data points that can be massaged via a variety of gimmicks. As a result of this, valuing stocks based on price to earnings, price to cash flow, and price to book value can often lead to inaccurate valuations. But sales, on the other hand, are all but impossible to gimmick. Either the money came in the door or it did not come in the door. And if a company is caught faking its sales number, somebody is going to jail. So they're making a point here. When you're looking, when you want to find out what's really happening, compare the sales to whatever it is. You can to sales to earnings, sales to whatever. Price to sales, all right? But the point is the sales can't be gimmicked. That's their argument. So the fact that stocks are now trading at a PS ratio, a price to sales ratio, that matches the tech bubble, the single largest stock bubble in history, tells us that we're truly trading at astronomical levels, levels associated with staggering levels of excess. And the implication, of course, is that at least a correction and perhaps a crash is coming, and perhaps even before the end of this year. So it's another opinion. You know, and there's plenty of them around there, and there aren't any of them that are prophecy. None of them are guaranteed, but nevertheless, I don't see anyone who says, oh, really, other than the government, perhaps, that says everything is rosy, it's all going to work out fine, don't worry about a thing, I think we're going to do better. Virtually every independent analyst who takes a look at our economic circumstances is pessimistic, and some of them are saying October, September, and they're actually naming dates, which I think is a little bit ridiculous, but they are so convinced this thing's going down, they're even picking dates. It's like, it's going down on September 23rd or October 21st or whatever. They don't agree on the dates, but they're agreeing basically on the time of the year, and we'll watch and see. We'll see if it pans out. If it doesn't pan out, but it is all evidence, even if it doesn't happen this fall, even if it doesn't happen in the fourth quarter of the year, it seems that we are virtually certain to have something dramatic and unpleasant take place within the next four quarters. It won't necessarily happen in the third quarter or the fourth quarter of this year, but it seems like it's going to happen within the next four quarters, if not the last half of this year, first half of next year. Nobody can give you prophecy on this, but still the consensus is almost spectacular. People are saying, look out, look out, look out, look out. And if and when the stuff hits the fan, it'll be one of those, we told you so. You haven't done anything to take care of yourself.
And what's interesting now is we're all saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's not like any one of these analysts or any of these pundits or any of these newsletter writers are saying anything new. It's all based on the amount of debt.
Yep.
And the function of the system and how the system works. We all know that. What we don't know is just how much power does the federal and the government have working together with other global countries and other central banks and other governments, just how powerful in keeping the system functioning. So that's the unknown.
That's the unknown, but it really looks like they're losing their capacity.
Well,
when
you know,
we have faith in the system.
I've been saying that for 30 years. But and we do see little glitches along the way, so you can never, ever underestimate their power.
But what is this? What does their power rest on?
Their power rests on their ability to give and take, and they're going to give people what they think they have something, and then they end up taking it. They're
and
not going to.
It's not just that. It's based on the public's confidence.
Of course.
It's based on the public's confidence in what? I mean, the Federal Reserve has said a number of times that the dollar is based on public confidence. Confidence in what? And the answer is in the ability. It is a debt-based monetary system. And our confidence ultimately is based on the presumption that the debt will be paid. We're taking, sure, I'll buy a government bond because I have confidence that the government will make good on the bond. But the problem with the debt is that it's so big that that confidence is now irrational. It is irrational exuberance. I don't know that we can say we're exuberant about investing in bonds anymore, but that was a phrase that Greenspan used probably 4 years ago, something like that.
Well, a lot longer than that.
Well, maybe a lot longer than that.
20 years
ago. Well, my point, though, is when the public loses confidence that the debt can be paid, can and will be paid, when that confidence disappears, the whole system goes down. Because it's all based on debt. It's all based on promises to pay. And our national debt, $20 trillion is the official national debt. Some people, Lawrence Kotlikoff, economist, he says, including unfunded liabilities, it's over $200 trillion. If it's just the official national debt of $20 trillion, that's still over $60,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. And that's just the national government. We've got private debt and state debt and I mean, we are overwhelmed by debt. The world is overwhelmed by debt. And there is going to be a moment when the government is going to say, they're going to have to say, gee, we can't pay off on the bonds this month. And when that happens, when they can't even service the bonds and make the interest on the bonds, all of a sudden there's going to be a light bulb moment for the world. The American people may even understand what's going on. They say, let me think of this. You mean that the bonds can't be paid? That means they're worthless? And the whole thing goes down because those bonds, I mean, this is something, everyone seems to be catching on to the idea that the debt is too great to be repaid. Right? They don't necessarily talk about it all that much, but they get, okay, the debt's too big to be repaid. But what they don't understand is the debt is our form of asset in this debt-based monetary system. They're using those bonds as assets. They're using them as collateral. If it turns out that the debt can't be paid, those bonds that are sitting in pension funds, that are sitting in bank vaults and being used as collateral to make loans to the public, that those bonds disappear. Those assets disappear. We can't pay the debt, and we can't cancel the debt. What are we going to do with the debt? I don't think I haven't heard anyone else talk about this in the media, and maybe there are plenty of people who are, but I haven't heard anyone else talk about the predicament. It's not just a function of the magnitude of the debt. Yeah, we have a lot of debt, but the problem is that is our form of asset. That paper promised to pay. And once we lose confidence, those assets, all of those assets disappear. For example, if the public lost confidence in the government's ability to pay its bonds, to pay that debt that's inherent in every bond, it means that $20 trillion worth of paper assets disappear. They're gone. They're vaporized. Right? Can the economy withstand the loss of $20 trillion in paper assets? And yet, inevitably, we're going to see that, or at least most of it, is going to be repudiated because it can't be paid. And it will not just wipe out the debt, it will wipe out the correlative paper assets. And that's why the world is in it up to its ears, although most people don't get it yet. But sooner or later they will. They say, oh my God, you mean when we cancel a debt, we also wipe out our pension funds and our bank collateral?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. You know, in, again, in the Old Testament, I talk about this once in a while, but in the Old Testament, they have that they have a jubilee every 50 years where they would cancel all debts. But the debts were in the assets were tangible. I could borrow 10 ounces of gold from Melody under the Old Testament, and every 50 years, if we came up and I still owed Melody 10 ounces of gold, that gold, that debt would be canceled. I'd get to keep that 10 ounces of gold. But and Melody would lose the 10 ounces of gold, and that would be too bad for her, and it would be kind of good for me. But the point is, even if I wasted the 10 ounces of gold, the 10 ounces of gold would still exist. They'd be there in the economy, right? Melody would be damaged, the oligarchy would be damaged by having a jubilee every 50 years. The bankers would lose their collateral. But today we can't have a debt jubilee. We cannot cancel the debt because the system is based on debt. All of our paper debt is nothing but a debt instrument. Cancel the debt and the paper wealth that we have in this country, the paper assets, they vaporize. We can't have a jubilee because we don't have a tangible currency that'll still be there tomorrow when the debt is canceled. Cancel the debt, you cancel the paper assets, the correlative paper assets. They disappear. And you can't pay the debt. The debt is too big. Everybody gets that part. The debt is too big to be repaid, but virtually no one has picked up on the idea that, yeah, but it's not just the debt that gets canceled, it's the assets that get canceled too. Now what? That means we have a complete systemic collapse. We can't just rebuild this thing tomorrow. I mean, if they cancel the debt today, we can't just rebuild tomorrow and say, well, we'll just get our gold. The gold is still here. Used to be that I owed the gold to Melody. Now I get to keep the gold, but the gold is still here. I can still go out and go to work. Melody's been inconvenienced because she loaned me 10 ounces of gold in the first place. Yes, she's had a problem, but the gold is still here. We can work through this. It won't happen with the cancellation of the debt in today's society. Then the debt's gone, so are the paper assets. And that will be ruinous. It will be something unlike anything the world has ever seen before. I mean, this is a biblical, the trouble that's coming is of biblical proportions. This is not, oh, we're going to have a little recession. No, we're going to have a problem where all of a sudden there is no money in the system. All right? Other than for whatever people, if you've got any real money, gold or silver, yeah, all right, you'll be able to buy things. Whatever's for sale, might be able to get a house or a car or whatever, buy some groceries. Any case, you know, we are in trouble, and it's not just the debt-based monetary system. We're going to take a break, a couple of commercials, be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We've been talking about this problem with debt. It's bigger and far more fantastic. This has never happened before. No. The world has never before had a debt-based monetary system. We presume our debt is wealth. We are based on the presumption somebody promised to pay, and we accept those promises as if they were set in stone and they were a done deal, and they're not.
And you know what's interesting?
It's going to be revealed that those promises can't be kept. They can't even pay the interest on them. And when that happens, people are going to will open their eyes, open their ears, and they're going to say, OMG. And it won't be a small thing. I mean, this will be unprecedented. The collapse will ultimately be global, and it will be unprecedented because we've never before had a world based on debt-based currency. Never happened before. Now we do. Again, can't pay the debt and can't repudiate the debt. What are you going to do with the debt?
The monetary policy that they have created, particularly after the 2008, I mean, it's disastrous. And you know, the analysts talked about, you know, depression-like time prior to, you know, for 1928 to 1929, and he's suggesting emerging markets. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
what do you think these emerging markets are going to do when the rest of the world that creates the money is dead, basically? they're not going to survive. Well, no. You think people are going to be, you know, there's not going to be any money to move these emerging markets. And I think right now all they're trying
What's
to do
What's a good
is,
emerging market, Melody?
Yeah.
What is a good one?
Gold and silver is the
that
only
would be
emerging
the two
market.
Markets that would be the two emerging markets that are likely to prosper under in the calamity that's coming our way.
Absolutely. And right? I have a box 500 1 ounce silver eagles at a very special price. You do have to get the full box, 500. They're 2017s. They're sealed by the U.S. Mint, $18. You're saving about 150, a little more than that, per box. So it's
You're saying $18 per coin.
$18 per coin. Mm-hmm. And you're saving about a little over $150 per for this box. And at $18, that cost is $9,000. It includes all your shipping costs, too. So it's a great buy for a box of Silver Eagles. And I also have a box of 1 ounce rounds that I'll sell for $16.25 per coin, which is another steal, and that box would be $8,125, and that also includes your shipping costs. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for their weekly newsletter. I do have just a couple of little reports today. McConnell, the U.S. Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, I couldn't think of his first name there for a moment, he released a revised health care. He's releasing it now, hoping that it gets passed so they don't have to take their 2 weeks off. Isn't that kind of funny how they announce that they're going to take time off so they can get these issues done, and then all of a sudden that they come out with a new legislation and to see if they can get it passed. And he's going to try for a vote.
This is like taking a vote in a third grade boys' class as to whether or not you should continue studying for another hour or that you should take recess. Take a vote.
He's planning for a vote on the new bill next week. The revised plan includes Senator Ted Cruz's proposal to let insurers offer stripped-down, low-cost health care plans that do not comply with Obamacare regulations to cover certain benefits. And, of course, it's the maternity, newborn, and things like that, how outpatient prescription drugs. Blue Cross Blue Shield Association, they've said that these skinny plans would raise insurance premiums. They're kind of like the less you get, the more we're going to charge you mentality. So we'll just have to see. The legislation retained two taxes on the wealthy that helped pay for the Obamacare law. They are a 3.8% tax on net investment income for individuals earning more than $200,000 and couples earning more than $250,000, and a 0.9% surtax for the Medicare insurance program for elderly on those programs. And we'll see if it gets passed. Maybe they'll be able to do their vacation on August 1st if they get this done, but, we'll see.
You think they'll send us all a postcard or a coconut from their vacation?
You think?
I don't know. I haven't received a coconut from any of my congressmen ever before, but if they're taking a vacation down to the beach, how about sending coconuts to all your constituents?
Yeah, they should
do that. Coconuts for constituents, Melody. It sounds like a bumper sticker to me.
So we can throw it at them when they don't do what we want them to do.
Maybe so.
U.S. producer prices unexpectedly rose in June as sustained increases in the cost of services offset declining energy prices, suggesting a recent moderation in inflation was likely temporary. No, I don't think that was the major impact on gold coming down, but we did see some nice tick ups in gold when inflation was certainly at least talked about. In the 12 months through June, the PPI increased 2.0%. And again, they just look at this recent retreat that we had in May as temporary. So prices are beginning to move up. Hopefully it'll satisfy the Federal Reserve at their silly 2% that the world deems as important. But we all know if anybody goes to the shore, to the store, or to the shore and buys anything, things certainly are not cheap anymore. And I don't see costs dropping significantly. Boxes get smaller, product gets smaller, but the price either stays the same or goes up. That's only in America.
Well, maybe only in a debt-based monetary system, which is the madness is finally coming home to roost. And I don't know when the people are going to figure this out. It's not. It's so surprising, so amazing. It's like you find out, oh my God, I've been deceived all my life. I mean, it is a shocking, again, I was belaboring that point about the Jubilee in the Old Testament. All right, they had a Jubilee every 50 years, but even though I might not pay the 10 ounces of gold I owe back to Melody, the 10 ounces of gold are still here in the economy, in the Old Testament economy. All right, somebody's got it. So the economy can continue to function. But in this circumstance, in a debt-based monetary system, when they cancel the debt, all right, and finally they admit, gee, we can't pay the debt, guess what? They destroy all of the relevant money, or at least most of it. All right? It's not where the gold is still there. All right? In the debt-based monetary system, all the debt instruments disappear. They become worthless. It goes out and turns into hyperinflation is what they'll call it. But that's what happens. The debt-based currency, the debt-based monetary system, the whole thing hyperinflates. Prices go up, skyrocketing, right? While we lose trust, while the public loses its trust a little by little in the currency. That's what it is. That's what hyperinflation is. It's a psychological phenomena where I will accept $100,000 today to pay for something. Maybe a new limousine, special limousine. Tomorrow, I'm going to need $200,000. And the day after that, I might need $1 million because I'm losing confidence that I will be able to accept those pieces of paper and find some other dummy that I can pass them off on. Once that confidence starts to go, hyperinflation takes place and prices skyrocket. And finally, you reach a point, you go through a certain amount of hyperinflation, and finally people say, this is stupid. This is unreasonable. I'm not even going to take $1 million for an old Ford pickup truck. I won't do it because I know the $1 million aren't worth anything. Right? And then the whole thing goes bang. It was right down the toilet. So like I say, this is unprecedented. When this happens, it won't be like an Old Testament jubilee. When the debt is finally canceled, we have to cancel the paper currency also, the paper debt instruments, stocks, bonds, paper dollars, bank accounts. One way or another, they all get repudiated. They disappear. Then what? What are you going to do for money? Right? Like I said, the Old Testament, the money is still there. Melody doesn't get the 10 ounces of gold I owe, but the money is still there in the economy. The economy really isn't hurt by the Jubilee. But this thing goes down, and everyone's, it's, you're going to walk out the door, and you're not, if you're relying on paper, you're not going to have any money, any currency. In the extreme, that's where we're heading. Imagine going out the door looking for groceries when none of the money, I don't care if you have a mattress full, you can have a mattress full of Confederate money. It won't be worth any less or more than your Federal Reserve notes. The only thing that'll get you through, if you think you're going to need some kind of money, you're going to need some gold and silver coins. I got something. You mentioned that Mitch McConnell, you were trying to think of McConnell's or Mitch McConnell's first name. Here's something from Western Journalism, and the headline is Nancy Pelosi mistakes Trump for Bush for the fifth time.
Well, don't put me in her category.
Well, I'm not. You haven't done it five times yet. If you mistake Mitch McConnell's name five times, then you'll be in Pelosi's category. But as it is, it's just one for you and five for Pelosi.
Well, I'm going to start keeping track of the things that you forget.
You don't have enough paper. You don't have enough paper for that. That'd be a list that you could do, break your little hard drive and just, oh my God, the poor little hard drive. I can't write any more of this. It says, during an interview with San Francisco television station that aired Tuesday, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from California, referred to President Donald Trump as President Bush. And this is at least the fifth time she's made this error. Everything we've seen so far, and this is a quote from Nancy Pelosi, she says, everything we've seen so far with the president has been about tax cuts for the rich. In fact, California very directly, affecting California very directly is the Affordable Care Act. President Bush has come out against that, as you know, and it is not even a health care bill. The Republican bill is not even a health care bill. It's a tax bill disguised as a health care bill. She had presumably mistaken Trump for the 43rd president. She called him President Bush has come out against it. She meant President Trump. She has presumably mistaken Trump for the 43rd president, George W. Bush, although it's possible she may instead have been talking about his father, 41st President George Herbert Walker Bush. And the point behind this, you know, it's on one level, it's kind of silly, it's kind of funny, it's kind of irrelevant, but it really does indicate that, you know, it's another evidence. It does look like Nancy has reached a point in years or she's beginning to have some slippage. The gears are not always meshing upstairs right now, and there have been other reports that suggest maybe it's time to go home and, you know, set the rocker out on the veranda and watch the sunset. It's not really funny. It's something that happens to everyone, and I'm sure it'll happen to me. You know, you live long enough, you fail to function properly, but at the moment it appears that Nancy might be sliding in a way where people are going to say it's time for her to go. Now, maybe she's not going to go until the next election, which is 18 months or whatever from now. But
which is the opportune time for the administration to bring up term limits. But that won't happen. But
I don't even, you know, I don't care about term limits. I think the problem is not that the congressmen are there so long.
They shouldn't be there 30 years.
Well, I agree with that. But the real problem, to my mind, is it's the bureaucracy. The people that are, they talk about this deep government, right? These are the bureaucrats who've been there all their lives, and while the politicians are just dancing around trying to find out what's going on, I think the bureaucrats actually know. At least some of them do, and they're pushing buttons and pulling levers that the congressmen don't imagine to even exist. Something's got to be done about the bureaucrats. It used to be when I was a kid, if you elected a new president, what did he do? He brought in his
people
from around the country. If a new Republican came in, they brought in new Republicans from California and Nebraska and Florida and Illinois, and they sent them up, and they inhabited the bureaucracy. They operated the bureaucracy while the new Republican was in office. And if the next election they brought in a Democrat, fine, they threw out all the Republican bureaucrats and they replaced them with Democrat bureaucrats. And people said, oh, this is a bad situation. I think maybe it was a good situation. It did not allow the bureaucracies to set up in Washington as if they were cast in concrete. I think it was maybe a better idea. It was corrupt. There were problems with it, but it is this bureaucracy that sits here as if it was eternal. That's where I think we get into problems. And no president. I mean, we've seen Trump go in there. He can't handle what's going on. The deep state, that's what I was looking for, is the deep bureaucracy.
And he brings them in from previous administrations, previous Goldman Sachs.
At the top, but even, you know, he's going to appoint someone for the Department of Energy. But there's a bureaucracy in the Department of Energy, and you can appoint anyone you like to be head of that department. But whether the department is going to work and do what the head says, or they're going to drag their heels and, you know, do what they can to frustrate in a way that's, you know, the clerks run the government. And if they can make pieces of paper disappear. They can make it take a week to get a piece of paper from one desk in one part of the room to another desk in the other part of the room. They can slow things down and grind things to a halt, and what do you do with them? I mean, you can't even prove what's going on. So in any case, I'm just saying that term limits for congressmen and for senators, something's got to be done about this bureaucracy that sits there with people that are there for a lifetime, effectively a lifetime appointment. Something's got to be done, and if we don't do that, they're going to run the government. And the Congress and the Senate will just be there as window dressing.
This is something a little out of our usual discussions and so forth, but the UN has warned that conditions in Gaza are deteriorating more rapidly than forecasted. They have 2 million people in Gaza, and I guess the last power plant finally came to a halt. So there's
the power in Gaza.
No power in Gaza. And
we'll talk more about it. We'll talk more about it when we get back from our commercial break. Melody and I will return shortly. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. We're talking about the problem they're having with the Palestinians. 2 million, they're out of power, apparently.
Yeah, let me just talk a little bit about this. You know, their isolation and deterioration began when Hamas took over about 10 years ago, and that prompted Israeli warfare, siege, and blockade. In 2013, Egypt closed its border and destroyed the commercial tunnels, which provided the strip with goods, food, fuel, medicine. And there's been some new policies that have been adopted by the Palestinian president. And now they have no power. They were getting by with about 3 to 4 hours a day of electricity. Now that's gone, and now the whole strip is basically without electricity now for the foreseeable future. They had a lone power plant, and that's been shut down entirely because of the last of the fuel that was imported from Egypt has run out, and there's no word on when or even if another shipment of fuel is likely to arrive. So, I mean, this is...
When they say they shut down commercial tunnels, mm-hmm. Were they speaking metaphorically, or do they mean that there were underground tunnels that had been used to ship commercial goods from Egypt to the Palestinians? Go essentially under whatever barriers the Israelis had installed, and they were providing them through physical tunnels. Do you think that's what they meant?
Possibly. It doesn't really go into details. They did close the border and destroy the commercial tunnels.
Yeah, man. I think I don't know either, and I think they actually mean there were tunnels, though. That they were. Now, the thing about the Palestinians is they are perhaps. And I'm not here to weep for the Palestinians and the rest of that, but they are perhaps the most cursed and despised people in the world. And the reason I say that is, of course, they've got a problem with Israel. All right, everybody knows that. But they've had a problem for a long time. And the Palestinians have even had a problem emigrating to, say, Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia didn't want the Palestinians. They're not taking any refugees. They may take some of them. I don't know. But they have maintained barriers where both sides are content to leave the Palestinians caught in this pressure cooker. They are trapped between the Israelis and the other Muslim nations. Muslim nations, oh, this is terrible. The Israelis have done this to the Palestinians. All right, we'll take them in as refugees and take care of them. But for the most part, they haven't done that. And so there they are, caught in this vice, and everyone seems to want to put them under enough pressure where they will finally either die or fight to the death. I don't know what they want, but the Palestinians really, you know, who's going to help the Palestinians? People try to exploit the problem in order to get at Israel, but nobody says, hey, why don't we bring, let's take 100,000 Palestinians and we'll move them into Iraq or Iran or whatever. I know, but we do take 100,000. Saudi Arabia takes 100,000. Iraq takes 100,000. By the time we get done, we cut the population from 2 million down to 1 million, which might be tolerable. I'm not saying it'd be a good thing, but
the conditions that these people are living in,
I know.
You know, that talks about. They have refused referrals for the people that are sick to leave Gaza for medical treatments in East Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. The Abbas, the Palestinian Authority led by Abbas, he has slashed fuel allocations for the Strip and cut by 40% payments to Israel for the supply of electricity. Now they don't have none whatsoever. Factories have been compelled to close. Sewage treatment plants have been shut down,
which means disease is going to start to run rampant.
All sewage into the Mediterranean. They've closed beaches where people have gone there during the night to escape from the heat. I mean, the conditions there sound terrible.
I understand that, and it's an extraordinary, you know, everybody just sees this Palestinians versus the Israelis, but really the Palestinians, it's versus the Israelis and the Muslims in other countries.
So then
Nobody wants to take the Palestinians and give them much help.
And this crisis, I mean, it's going to explode. And again, you're looking at unrest. What kind of unrest is going to come from this? And you're right, the risk of disease.
Yeah. Shut down the sewage system in a particularly in a population that is extremely dense. People are packed in. 2 million sardines packed into one can. Shut down the sanitation system, and it's almost certain that you're going to see some diseases begin to propagate through that community that are lethal to thousands of people, maybe hundreds of thousands.
Going into the Mediterranean.
Yeah, I know. Oh. Which can affect Israel. Mm-hmm. And maybe other nations at the east end of the Mediterranean. It's hard to say how far this can go, but it is an extraordinary story that the Palestinians have been trapped in circumstances where the Muslims won't help them, the Israelis won't help them, and there they sit. Nobody will help.
Yeah.
It's got to drive you crazy. You know, it's one of the things. You can't be surprised if the Palestinians become virulent and ferocious in their own way because they've been put through a kind of hell.
But they also have to be weak. But they also have to be weak now. My gosh, no food, medicine.
I understand.
No power. I mean,
I understand. But the ones who survive are going to be strong and ferocious. If they have to rob their fellow Palestinians in order to get enough food to keep, you know, the alpha males alive and the rest of that sort of thing. But it's a kind of hell on earth, is my guess. I haven't been there. Don't know it. At least a purgatory. If it's not hell on earth, it's a purgatory on earth.
Why isn't there any humanitarian?
I think it's because the Muslims want to use
Israel?
The Palestinians as a pawn to get at Israel.
Yeah.
And the Israelis, they're not going to take the Palestinians. They don't want them. But the Muslims could. And this has been going on for decades. The Muslims could have helped the Palestinians. I mean, when we say that Egypt closed down the tunnels, that we're supplying commercial tunnels, that we're supplying goods and services to Palestine. In the report, I don't know what happened there for an absolute fact, but the report that you read did not say Israel forced Egypt to close the tunnels or Israel bombed the tunnels. Maybe they did, but the report says Egypt closed the tunnels.
Egypt
said, we're not going to help these Palestinians anymore. Not Israel, Egypt. You would think Egypt, wow, let's help the Palestinians. They're Muslims, we're Muslims. No, they're not doing it. I mean, the Palestinians, just a terrible curse to be born Palestinian. I mean, that's a rough life. That is a hard, hard, hard life. And it's not just hard because, you know, people go through trials and tribulations wherever they live. But you get help. You know, not always, but you can get help usually. They're not getting any help. They're just going through trials and tribulations, and nobody really cares. So, I don't know. I do not envy the people that are born into Palestine.
So, again, as you mentioned, it's another sign of...
It's another, you know, you've got a pressure cooker here. These Palestinians are either going to die or they're going to come out fighting. They're going to either die in the pressure cooker or they're going to find a way to attack. So we talk about black swan events that might trigger some sort of a global problem, economic problem. Well, Palestine is one of the black swans. I don't know that it's going to trigger a massive problem that'll go global, but it's one of the black swans. It's something that's explosive. And without they're just making it worse right now. They're not going to have any electric power for even a couple hours a day.
No, none.
I guarantee whoever's standing up and saying, we need to bomb somebody, we need to kill somebody in Palestine, he has an audience. There are people that are agreeing with him. And if you, where it's going to end, I have no idea.
Jimmy Carter, he's 92 years old. He really gets around, but, you know, being president allows you certain amenities that helps you even when you're 92. But I guess he collapsed today, and he was up in Canada, I guess, which is interesting because I think he collapsed from dehydration in Winnipeg as they were helping to construct a Habitat for Humanity home. I wonder how many he's helped to
Been working on that Habitat for Humanity home, I'll bet you 20 years.
For a long time.
Yeah, maybe more than that. I don't recall exactly when he was there before Reagan. He may have been Habitat for Humanity. He might have been involved in that in 30 years where he's out there. So he was, president finally made good. He got himself a job as a carpenter. I wish more of our presidents would get a job as a carpenter, either before or after they get elected president. Might teach him a certain amount of humility, but I mean, Carter was serious about his faith, I think, and that's what he was doing. He's trying to help people best he can.
And that's what he was doing. He was working in the sun for about an hour, using a handsaw to cut some wood for the staircase at 92 years of age. So,
you know, you keep working like that, it'll keep you alive. It doesn't wear you out. You know, a lot of people don't understand. You see people in Walmart, for example, that are riding around in those little carts, electric carts. And they usually weigh 300 pounds or more, and they're riding around
The cart or the person?
The person. The person weighs three, a big person usually, and they can't walk very easily. And there's that. And people think it's because their joints have worn out. And most people don't understand that your joints don't wear out in the sense most people imagine. They think, oh, my knees, they're always hurting. I can't walk. The reason you can't walk is because you stopped walking. You didn't stop because you couldn't walk. You stopped because you chose to sit on your butt all the time. Your cartilage, which separates the ends of your thigh bone from the bone in your calf, that cartilage is... If you ever have chicken, right? You can see the cartilage on the leg, on the thigh, whatever, you can see it. It doesn't have any blood vessels in it. How does it survive? How does it feed? How does it get rid of toxic waste while it's there in the joints? And it's our cartilage is basically the same as what you see in chickens. How does it expel toxins? How does it take in nutrients? There's no blood vessels to feed the cartilage. And the way it survives, the way it is by compressing and decompressing like a sponge. And when you compress the cartilage, you squeeze the toxins out. And when you release the compression on the cartilage, it absorbs moisture and fluid and nutrients from the fluid that typically surrounds one of your joints. Now, the point I'm trying to make is if you don't use your body, if you don't get out there and compress and decompress the cartilage in your knees and in your ankles and in your back, it eventually rots. It can't get rid of the toxins and it can't absorb nutrients. It dies. And that's why people can't walk. And it's not because their bodies gave out on them. It's because they stopped doing exercise. And it's telling you, Jimmy Carter is a good example of this. He's just saying, look. Look, he's been exercising. He's out there working a saw, 92 years old, right? I mean, you have other problems. You have heart attack and strokes and rest, that sort of thing as you get older. I get that. But if you want to keep your joints intact, you need to exercise. And if you think you can keep your joints intact by sitting on your butt watching TV all day, you be dumb. It's not going to happen.
You know, too, my uncle, he's 85, and when he had just a minor little stroke, and the first thing they told him is do not get a chair that pushes you up. and you not get a lift that takes you up the stairs. Mm-hmm. And he has a split-level home, so he does mm-hmm. have to go upstairs. It does have a spot where he can mm-hmm. rest and so forth. And they says, do not do those items because you will go downhill.
Yeah.
Because the even in a chair, you can lift yourself up out of you use your arms to mm-hmm. lift yourself out of a chair. If you get the chair that pushes you up so it puts you in a standing position, you no longer are using your arms. And it's just little things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you're elderly,
you think it's a convenience. You think it's convenience, you don't have to work. No, it's a death sentence. Yeah. This body is made to do physical work. Exercise, you gotta do it. If you don't, the body will not, it won't continue to function for you. And from what I've been told, even if you have the problem where the cartilage has begun to rot out in your joints from too much inactivity, it's my understanding that it will rebuild if you will go through the effort and perhaps the pain of trying to stand up, exercise, and eventually the cartilage, whatever remains, will actually grow. It'll get more feeding. It'll fill in the voids, and perhaps you will be better off. I'm not a doctor giving medical advice, but I'm just telling you, the body is made to work. Jimmy Carter is evidence of that, and all of us should pay heed. Mr. Carter's doing a good job.
Yes,
we're out of time. I want to thank all you folks for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.